Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, and today I'm joined by CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer, Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Christina Laurie, covering Kingston City Council's decision to formally oppose the controversial Bill 5.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
With a unanimous vote from Council at their May 20th meeting, Kingston is joining the growing number of Ontario municipalities formally opposing Bill 5, chiefly due to environmental concerns. Bill 5, or the Protect Ontario by Unleashing Our Economy Act, was proposed by the Doug Ford PC government with the promise of speeding up infrastructure and resource extraction projects. In a release announcing Bill 5 in April, the province says the bill will, quote, cut the red tape and remove duplicative processes. This includes replacing the Endangered Species Act with a new framework that reduces protections for at-risk species and enabling the creation of special economic zones that may override local planning authority. Bill 5 is currently making its way through Queen's Park and expected to have a third reading in June. While the release also states the province will maintain robust environmental standards throughout, a chorus of environmental organizations and Kingston City Council remain skeptical. Councillor Lisa Osanek brought the motion to formally oppose the bill as a last-minute addition to the agenda last week. She outlined the key environmental concerns that motivated the motion.
Bill 5 has been opposed by every environmental group I'm aware of. Ontario Nature, CPAWS, Davis Suzuki, Eco Justice, the Canadian Environmental Law Association, to name a few. These are the specifics. For nearly 20 years, Ontario's Endangered Species Act has been a cornerstone of environmental protection. It requires that species at risk and the habitats they rely on be protected from harm. But Bill 5 will repeal the ESA and replace it with a weaker, hollowed-out act called the Species Conservation Act. This new act is so narrow, it will virtually, you know, ensure the continued decline and extinction of the species it's supposed to protect. Bill 5 will amend the Endangered Species Act to make it optional, not mandatory, to list the species at risk. Bill 5, if passed, also actually gives Cabinet the power to decide which species deserve protection, effectively making protection a political choice, not a scientific one. The new law also defines animal habitat to mean only the nest, den, or immediate area around it, not the forests, wetlands, or feeding grounds they need to survive. Cabinet is allowed to further narrow that definition. This would leave species that are already in decline due to habitat loss without the basic things that they need to survive. The bill also redefines what qualifies as habitat, which could limit the areas protected for vulnerable species and lead to even more habitat loss. The remaining landscape could resemble basically a moonscape without regulation. Even harassment of at-risk wildlife would be unregulated. Right now, developers must apply for permits when projects threaten species or their habitat. These are reviewed by environmental experts and they come with requirements to reduce harm. Under Bill 5, that process is replaced by an online registration form. Once a company clicks submit, they're free to start building. There's no more safeguards. The registry is not even required to be public. The public won't know what's going on. and the government will no longer be required to help species recover. The requirements for recovery plans that are now in the Species Act are being eliminated in Bill 5. With Bill 5, the province is walking away from its responsibility to protect and prevent the loss of species and protect the health of our ecosystems. We're already in the middle of a biodiversity crisis. More than 230 species in Ontario are already at risk of extinction. The Endangered Species Act needs to be enforced, and Bill 5 needs to be stopped.
While the release from the province also promises to honor constitutional obligations to Indigenous communities, including the duty to consult, Councillor Brandon Tozo noted the pushback from Indigenous leaders.
I also wanted to highlight one part of this that I find particularly troubling, other than the endangered species aspect, is just how much the First Nations community is being railroaded by this when it comes to economic development. So there have been a number of different First Nations groups that have spoken out against this because they are afraid of their interests not being listened to when it comes to mining in the Ring of Fire. So I think this is a perfect example of bodies of government paying lip service when it comes to reconciliation, but when economic push comes to shove, they're not really walking the walk.
Councillor Connie Glenn also brought attention to the portion of the bill that would allow Cabinet to designate any location in Ontario a special economic zone, where the government can speed up projects by exempting companies from complying with provincial laws or regulations.
There's also, you know, special economic zones that could be created. We could have one of these in Kingston and have no ability to say what gets built and how. We're in the middle of creating a new official plan. We are doing this thoughtfully with a lot of consultation, and this could be dropped on us and there will be no consultation. We'll be told what gets to go in this special zone. So, you know, we are allowing control and contribution from our own community to the conversation to be taken away. Now, I understand the challenges that developers face with permits, and yes, they are slow, and expedition of permitting, I think, is something that we do need to look at. But this is like taking a sledgehammer to an issue rather than a fine precision instrument to figure out how we can make it work better. I don't think that this is going to accomplish this unleashing of the economy.
Council voted unanimously to oppose Bill 5 and urged the province of Ontario to, quote, support housing and infrastructure development in ways that align with sound environmental planning and wildlife protection and empower municipalities with appropriate planning tools. This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Thank you, Chris. Next is Dinah Jansen with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, about Gananoque Mayor John Beddoe's decision to pursue a judicial review related to his suspended pay.
Thank you, Jesse. Mayor John Beddoe says he will seek a judicial review of Gananoque Council's decision to suspend his pay and require a formal apology following a damning report from the town's integrity commissioner that concluded he'd committed 8 breaches of the Municipal Code of Conduct. The report, prepared by Integrity Commissioner Tony Fleming, concluded that Beddoes engaged in a pattern of harassment, discriminatory remarks, and aggressive behavior toward both town staff and fellow councillors. Among the most serious findings were repeated comments about firing the town's chief administrative officer, sexist remarks, and a heated confrontation over a residential school memorial. In a statement released last Thursday, Beddoes said he respects the role of the Integrity Commissioner in the importance of codes of conduct, but raised serious concerns regarding procedural fairness and bias in the investigation process. Council's sanctions followed a months-long investigation that began with 43 formal complaints, 18 of which were investigated and 8 ultimately substantiated in the view of the Integrity Commissioner. Fleming's report highlights multiple inappropriate statements attributed to the mayor, among them a remark that women are often promoted above their abilities due to affirmative action, and another suggesting women may not be the best candidates for certain jobs because they might not return to work after having children. Beddoes acknowledged making the comments but claimed they were taken out of context, referring to his military background and physician recruitment discussions. In another complaint, the mayor allegedly made a sexual joke by asking the town's former CAO how to find the G-spot. In the report, Fleming notes that Beddoes agreed he'd made the statement, however explained it was a play on words based on the name of Gananoque's security contractor, G-Force, and its parking spot, by referring to it as finding the G parking spot. Beddoes confirmed the comment, calling it a poorly worded pun. Fleming deemed the remark offensive and not to be tolerated. Four separate complaints dealt with Beddoes' comment to the current CAO, including repeated assertions that she could be fired without cause if a sexual harassment claim were filed. The commissioner found these remarks unsettling and damaging to the workplace atmosphere. Beddoes admits making the statement, but said it was made in a hypothetical example of how a CAO could be terminated for cause in such a situation. The report also outlines an incident on July 11th when Beddoes allegedly stood over and yelled at a fellow councillor during a discussion on placing shoes at Town Hall as a memorial for residential school victims. The mayor admitted the exchange became heated, but said he was offended by a perceived comparison to Remembrance Day. The mayor denies any yelling. The Integrity Commissioner report notes a strained relationship between the mayor and staff, but our overall finding is that the mayor has a genuine desire to create a positive working environment, but he's struggles with interpersonal relationships, it reads. Fleming recommended the report be a reset point for the mayor. Thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with a story from the LJR reporter for The Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forstell, about local efforts to rescind Bill 6, otherwise known as the Safer Municipalities Act.
Thank you, Dinah. Made up of members from 112 civil society organizations working across Ontario, the newly formed Encampment Justice Coalition is rallying to rescind Bill 6. The coalition, which previously published an open letter to Premier Doug Ford, are asking the provincial government to rescind the bill, which they say violates human rights and goes against evidence-based and proven solutions to address Ontario's encampment crisis. The Encampment Justice Coalition represents an intersection of organizations with experience in housing, homelessness, healthcare, drug policy, disability justice, human rights, settlement, migrant justice, public transit, and Canadian law. They are united in their opposition to Bill 6, saying in a news release that, quote, punishing encampments and their residents and wrongly suggesting that jails and coercive drug treatment, not housing, are the solution is a failed policy imported from the United States. Dr. Henry Swoboda, an expert in emergency medicine and addictions who works in urgent care at Kingston Health Sciences Center and for the Ontario Poison Center, was adamant that the measures called for in Bill 6, quote, will not make the community safer. It'll make it sicker, more traumatized, and more deadly, because threatening people with fines and incarceration for using drugs will only make them less likely to seek help. Recovery requires choice, support, and safety, Swoboda emphasized. Patrick Brandt, a member of the local urban Indigenous community, expressed his concern that Indigenous people and people of color, who are already disproportionately represented in the correctional system, will become bigger targets if Bill 6 allows police more power. Specifically, the bill allows police officers to issue directions to individuals, quote, suspected of consuming illegal substances in public places. Brandt said the bill stipulates that officers can, quote, arrest individuals without a warrant if they have reasonable grounds to believe the person is guilty of an offense. The Encampment Justice Coalition calls on Premier Ford to stand together with all Ontarians by investing in solutions to homelessness that are proven to work. In their press release, the coalition also invites the Premier and his government to meet with the group's representative and discuss positive solutions.
And thank you to Michelle Dory Forstell for that report. Now over to LJI reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island Radio, Ted Evans, with a story about an updated bylaw that will give the Greater Napanee Town Council greater financial freedom in procuring goods and services.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. At Greater Napanee's council meeting this week, staff highlighted a gap in the current procurement bylaw that restricts council's ability to maintain discretion over competitive purchases. The current process calls for tenders to be awarded to the lowest compliant bid meeting all requirements specified in the tender document. Staff noted that this language does not allow council the ability to prioritize one of the primary goals and objectives also outlined in the bylaw. Ellen Hamill with the town's financial and IT services department explained the fix staff are proposing.
Staff were directed to bring back a report to council with an update on the procurement bylaw review. So as a result of the last council meeting, we presented a recommendation to council to award a tender that was not the lowest bid. In reviewing the language of the current bylaw, we noted that there was no discretion available to council, particularly around non-low bid. So we feel that it's important at this point in time to provide that discretion option to council so that we can prioritize, again, obtaining the best value for the town as referred to in the bylaw itself, which is the best combination of price, technical merit, and quality that may not be the lowest price.
Hamill details what the final bylaw might include.
We're recommending this at this time as a temporary measure, as we, of course, are committed to coming back to council with a full review of this bylaw, which will include a number of recommendations and changes to language that undoubtedly will include changes to language around discretion and lowest compliant bid and best value for money. But we wanted council to have the ability to have that discretion available to them as we continue through the procurements of the remainder of the year.
The proposed update raised some concern from the public, with resident Tony Belisavis voicing his concerns.
The processes are designed to provide consistency as they attempt to balance the needs of values for the taxpayers, accountability, protections for the town, and simplicity of use. These different processes and their decision outcomes are not designed to be interchangeable. So using the best value for the lowest price model to make recommendations for the best value for money outcomes creates a disconnect between the process and decision. More importantly for the town, there is no supporting evidence in the available data to justify the change in the decision to best value for money, only an opinion.
Belisavis brought up the decision made for the purchase of the flooring at the Best in Bash Arena.
If you review the recent flooring procurement briefing, you will see we likely got the very best product in the competition. But no evidence was actually provided to council to show taxpayers actually got best value for the money being hyped during the presentation.
Manager of Legislative Services and Municipal Clerk Jessica Walters explained the language behind the bylaw.
We wouldn't expect that as soon as council passes this bylaw, now every single procurement staff are recommending not going with the low bid. It's just there to have it as a in case it is needed.
Hamill noted staff's procurement processes will remain the same.
Nothing else in our process will change. We will still score. We will still provide council with that scoring. We will still highlight what the lowest bid is. All it does is give council the option without waiving specifics within the bylaw to award to the non-lowest tender.
Mayor Terry Richardson explained it will be a step forward.
Ultimately, whether we change or add this addition to the bylaw at this point, we do have the ultimate decision-making on this process anyways, as we've always already seen anyways. So, and this is a temporary measure in order to get us through to making a bigger, better, stronger procedural bylaw.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJPE, Brenda Little, with a story about Prince Edward County Council's decision to oppose the proposed rollout of strong mayor powers.
Hi, I'm Craig Foster, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJPE 99.3 County FM in beautiful Prince Edward County. Coming are some of the top stories from PEC. You can hear County FM news 5 days a week, six times a day on 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county, or stream us at 99.3countyfm.ca.
At Tuesday's council meeting in Prince Edward County, it quickly became clear that most, if not all, councillors opposed the recent granting of strong mayor powers to Mayor Ferguson. Councillor Corey Engelsdorfer presented a resolution outlining reasons for the opposition to the legislation and asked for support to send a copy to the provincial government and other officials. After many questions and discussion points, Council voted unanimously to send the resolution asking the government to recommit to the meaning and spirit of democracy and rescind the Strong Mayor Powers legislation. 169 municipalities have been granted the powers, however, several communities have turned the legislation down. Part of the Strong Mayor Powers was created to focus on building 1.5 million new homes by 2031. We can hear Councillor Corey Engelsdorfer's brief comment following the presentation of the resolution.
I just want to be really clear that this resolution isn't personal. It isn't about Mayor Ferguson. It's about the proper role and purpose of this council. It's about unilaterally changing the terms upon which local government was elected, and it's about democracy.
Councillor Kate McNaughton raised concerns regarding future mayors and the powers.
There are several risks to any municipality, and certainly future mayors. It's gonna, if this legislation remains in place, there's risk. It should be the first question out of every mouth during the election period, asking potential mayors what they plan to do with Stronger Powers. My hope is that it will be rescinded prior to any further elections.
And Councillor Roy Pennell likened the legislation to a dictatorship.
To me, and it's not necessarily Prince Edward County, but a big part of the province. To me, it has the potential of being a dictatorship with the province initiating this. And it's very scary when I think of all their people in overseas to fight dictatorship. In my opinion, it's very close to the same.
Following the meeting, Councillor Corey Engelsdorfer speaks about the resolution. Councillor Engelsdorfer, why did you feel it was necessary to bring the resolution forward?
Like I said, I think I was shocked when it landed in my inbox, and I just feel like I'm not sure why the province would upend local government in our community. So we've all worked hard as a council. I think we strive to work together as a team, and I just feel like that's being yanked out from under us. I think it sends a strong message when, it's a unanimous vote. It shows me that council isn't happy with that bill or that legislation, so it's a good path forward, I think.
And asked if he was happy about the outcome of the resolution, Mayor Ferguson had this to say.
You know, as I said, this legislation came out of the blue. We didn't ask for it. It just arrived. And I get the issue of, people's feeling that democracy is being compromised, and I think some of it is pretty heavy-handed. It went the way I thought it would. It was unanimous vote, and it'll go to the province, but at the end of the day, I don't think there's going to be any effect. And as I mentioned, this evening I've delegated a bunch of stuff back to council or to the CAO, or continue to do that, because that's the way this council has worked from my experience and the way I want it to continue to work.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN, Dan Jones, with a story about the findings of a Port Hope crime statistics report.
In 2024, our community feedback was very clear. Residents wanted us to refocus on our core mandate, which is law enforcement. We heard that loud and clear. Although they appreciate a multitude of efforts in social development, there was a strong desire of the community to return to our grassroots, if you will.
Coburg Police Chief Paul Vandegraaff told the Police Services Board Tuesday that officers were busier in 2024, responding to approximately 4,500 more calls for service than the year before. He outlined that petty theft, break and enters, and intimate partner violence were down last year, while assault and impaired driving were up. He explained some statistics would be up given the increased calls.
Overall, collectively from our police service, this is to be expected. That violent crime is increasing. Road safety issues around impaired driving is increasing. drugs continue to be an issue for our community.
A major drug operation conducted by five police forces in Cobourg resulted in the seizure of 511 grams of fentanyl, four loaded firearms, and $167,000 in cash.
Fentanyl is generally sold by the 0.05 to 0.01 increments, and you can see that over 511 grams were seized. This amount would have equaled over 10,000 potential lethal doses of fentanyl within our community.
Officers were in the downtown core more, conducting 520 foot patrols and 517 property checks in 2024. Some of these checks are attributed to community concerns regarding the emergency homeless shelter. Senior management's credibility was questioned late last year as an anonymous letter from someone claiming to be in upper management alleged illegal activities, racism, sexism, and cronyism within the force. While that letter could not be properly investigated as the complainant was anonymous, Vandegraaff said that workplace harassment claims were investigated, with one employee resigning and two others being reprimanded. Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
Thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with CFRC's Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Thursday, June 5th, the rain returns with a 40% chance of precipitation and a daytime high of 21, dropping down to 14 overnight, and we're going to see a 60% chance of showers. Friday, June 6th, daytime high of 22 degrees with a 30% chance of precipitation. And then moving into the weekend, Saturday, June 7th, looks like it's going to be a beautiful sunny day here in the city of Kingston. Daytime high of 20 degrees, dropping down to 12 overnight. Sunday, June 8th, another sunny day, high of 21, dropping to 14 overnight. And then moving into the start of next week, Monday, June 9th, daytime high of 22. And Tuesday, June 10th, we're going to see a high of 23 degrees with a possibility of a thunderstorm in the afternoon and a 55% chance of rain. This is your City of Kingston traffic report. We begin with road closures. Albert Street, Princess to Mac, is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Aberdeen Street, William to Johnson, is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Aberdeen Street, William to Earl, is closed June 4th, 5th, and 11th for paving operations. Cassidy Street, Montreal to Maple, is closed until June 6th as part of the ongoing intersection improvements of Montreal and John Counter. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto, is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Macaulay Street, Daly to Rideau Heights Community Center West Entrance, closed June 7th from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. for Inclusive Play Project Fun Fair at the Rideau Heights Community Center. South Bartlett Street, Smith to Victoria, closed until August 29th for construction-related activities at 655 Princess Street. Sydenham Street, Princess to Queen, closed until October 3rd for the Sydenham Street Community Space. Victoria Street, Union to Johnson, closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. And Victoria Street, Princess to North Bartlett, closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. Here are some other delays and disruptions to be aware of. Bay Ridge Drive, Milford to Henderson. Expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure and intersection upgrades. Collins Bay Road, Woodbine to Princess. Expect delays while a contractor completes landscaping work on Collins Bay Road. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club. Expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Gardner's Road at Centennial and Creekford. Expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal upgrades, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Highway 2, Abbeydon to St. Lawrence. Expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Highway 15, Kingston Mills to Middle. Expect delays for a contractor to complete work on the Highway 15 CNR overhead structure. Montreal Street at John Counter. Expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage. Page Road, Jackson Mills to the end of Jackson Mills. Expect delays while a contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract. Quabbin Road, Highway 38 to Unity. Expect delays while a contractor is completing asphalt patching work in preparation for the annual surface treatment contract. Rock Road, Unity to Highway 38. Expect delays while a contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract. and Victoria Street and Earl Street. Expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction for sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit cfrc.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via cfrc.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.